So basically the question is, how do we know if somebody is in sympathetic dominance? We say that we've mentioned that it's related to erectile dysfunction and other nervous system issues. Is it when a person is stressed out, or do we look for more? And it's a complicated question. Certainly if somebody is stressed, we are going to consider sympathetic dominance. We're going to also look for things of the ability to relax. We can certainly be stressed, but if we are in a sympathetic dominant state, it's going to be more difficult for us to eat mindfully or sit on the couch and relax at the end of the day, sit still, these types of things. So we can definitely consider running tests for various neurotransmitters related to sympathetic dominance, such as serotonin. We could look for things like acetylcholine, which might be more of a parasympathetic neurotransmitter, measuring those. The best way to measure neurotransmitters is going to be in the cerebral spinal fluid. And that is obviously other tests out there have looked at urine. Urine, however, does not tend to be the best mechanism and as far as measuring these neurotransmitters. And what we've seen in research is that actually really the urine levels of these neurotransmitters actually correlates pretty poorly to sympathetic or to cerebral spinal fluid neurotransmitter levels. Do you want to tell them where we do it?
Yeah, so where if you do want to do a lab test looking at neurotransmitters, doing a platelet catecholamine test through Health Diagnostics Research Institute, HDRI labs, is the best that we're aware of at present for doing some of the neurotransmitter testing. And that's a great test to look for sympathetic dominance from a testing perspective. And then we can also look for some symptoms that can be correlated. So, for example, we know that epinephrine, which would be higher in a case of sympathetic dominance, can cause vasoconstriction and contribute to high blood pressure. So if someone has hypertension, we might be looking into whether sympathetic dominance may be a part of the root cause for that hypertension. And we may also be looking if someone's got chronic insomnia, their brain is overly active and they can't settle it at night enough to rest or go to sleep, then we might think the sympathetic dominance. A way to just very simply think about cortisol versus epinephrine is to think about how usually epinephrine is going to be more of your immediate stress response and cortisol is going to be more of a prolonged stress response, but both can get chronically elevated. And we do need to look for and consider that someone could become sympathetically dominant. And in that case, they're going to be basically in fight flight mode most of the time and have a really hard time with the rest and digest systems. So digestive problems, resting problems, hypertension potentially, and then we'll be considering that sympathetic dominance might be at play, and we'll want to look a little deeper into the sympathoadrenal medullary system, or SAS, as a potential contributing factor in those cases. And there may be high cortisol too, so we don't want to discount that as well. So we'll want to look at cortisol, and then we may also want to look at the SAS system, and treatment's going to be pretty similar for both. So if you're seeing high cortisol, you may not need to test for SAS. You may just treat and see that coming down together with cortisol.
And then this is a great question about the effect of taking too many supplements. So the question is around, if a person is dealing with a lot of different things, for example, gastrointestinal infection, adrenal stress, whatever else, they could end up on 20 plus different supplements and might take them 2 to 3 times per day, which is absolutely true. So the question is, does this overload the liver? Is it useful to work on all issues at once? And there's a struggle because all the supplements seem necessary based upon the symptoms, but one of the questions is, can the body truly cope with so many? And this is a case by case basis for sure. Most people in our clinic, we wind up when they are struggling with multiple root causes, as most everybody is, most people wind up being on 5 to 10 variations of supplements at one time and take them multiple times per day. Sometimes a little bit less, sometimes a little bit more. So most natural supplements can work well together and do work well together and are very synergistic. Now, there's a couple of things to consider here. One is if all of these supplements are capsules, that can be a lot of capsules for the body to break down. And definitely we want to be worried about any sort of upset to the digestive system over that. But if we can do some things in powder forms, we can do or herbs, we can take some of the pressure off the digestive tract to break down those capsules. Liquid tinctures, those are, you know, of course, another example here of avoiding the caps. So another thing is, sometimes I do get concerned about it overloading the body in general. And from a liver perspective, what I tend to worry about is more of a detox type of reaction of making the body break down pathogens so quickly or detox things so quickly based on increasing so many symptoms at one time. So it's definitely something to be aware of. There have been cases where people are really gung-ho, they don't feel any negative effects from capsules, and they just want to do it all at once. And definitely have prescribed probably up to 15 different products at a time without problems. But it is a place to exert caution with, and definitely we don't tend to start that high for anybody.
So basically, for me, my main considerations are, one, what's the threshold of tolerance for the individual that I'm working with? Two, am I focused as a practitioner in what I'm looking at treating? Because yes, we could give two or three things for every single different symptom, but that's not the functional approach. We're looking to get to the root causes, which there can be multiple, and we can stack up a lot of supplements and easily do 20 to 30 just on root causes, but we want to make sure that we're focused and hitting the highest leverage points and picking supplements that address multiple things. So if someone's got a GI infection like H. pylori, and they've got liver detoxification issues, and they've got a chronic infection like Lyme, we might pick something like N-acetylcysteine, which can help with liver detoxification because it's a precursor to glutathione. It can help with reducing H. pylori through its anti-biofilm agent, and it can help with Lyme because we know that glutathione is helpful and that biofilm is a part of that as well. So by really thinking through and mapping out in our mind and a framework of the main root cause issues, and then targeting as many as possible with as few supplements as possible to target and address them thoroughly, we can often get that number down a little bit. And it's important to sequence treatments too. So we may want to sequence, first we're gonna really focus on H. pylori and get rid of that. Then we'll address parasites, then we'll address yeast, or we might do two at once, or we might do three at once. It really depends on the person, their tolerance and threshold, how focused we feel the treatment is, if it's appropriately focused enough, and whether we can hit a lot of different root causes with the same supplements so that we can create a protocol that's well-designed without being too over the top. So considering all of that, we have to talk to the person that we're sitting in front of and mention, hey, we could do a lot of different things to deal with this situation. So let's get focused on what the priority is and the sequence is and what your particular threshold for, are you going to take things twice or three times a day and how many things are you going to take? And that will be a way that we can really get more focused. Plus, we can also consider how much can we do with food. So we can say, okay, we could take a probiotic or we could do a bunch of fermented foods. And is the person willing to do fermented foods? We could take a multi-mineral, or we could look at mineral-rich foods like liver. Are they willing to eat liver? These kinds of questions can help also to pare down our supplement protocols.
So another thing, just in the order of the supplement protocols, it's really going to be a combination of what symptoms the patient feels like they want to address first. What are their biggest symptoms? So their biggest symptom is fatigue, and we have an adrenal dysregulation picture and a small intestinal bacteria overgrowth picture. Even though small intestinal bacteria overgrowth is definitely correlated with having fatigue, we might get a little bit more bang for our buck as far as increasing that fatigue, increasing the energy more quickly by helping their HPA access and their cortisol levels. So we might choose in that case to address, say, an adrenal dysregulation scenario first. So it's kind of looking at the underlying desires, the motivation of the client in combination with where we feel like the biggest root cause factors are. So, you know, in this same example, if somebody complains that their fatigue is really bad, but we run a Dutch test and we see that, oh, their adrenals are actually really not that dysregulated. Obviously, there's many other causes of fatigue, but just in this simplified example, and then we might say that, oh, their SIBO, say their methane levels in SIBO, are completely off the chart. So in that situation, even though fatigue is their predominant thing, it might seem so clear that the small intestinal bacteria overgrowth is extremely severe and an adrenal HPA dysregulation is slightly out of balance. So in that situation, we might start to presume that perhaps the small intestinal bacteria overgrowth is actually a bigger contributor to that particular symptom, and that might wind up motivating us to basically convince or talk to them and educate them to actually start by doing the small intestinal protocol first.
So we're going to be considering whether there is multiple root causes, if one takes priority over another because either it's a big symptom or because we feel like it might be contributing to the other. So you're going to consider those. I usually don't feel like most things that we're using in clinic are going to overburden the liver in terms of supplementation, unless we're using a lot of things like vitamin A, which can cause liver toxicity in high doses. We're usually very careful with that. If we're using a lot of, if we're using vitamin A and we're doing a lot of like parasite herbs or chronic infection herbs, those can start to get a little rough on the liver. If we're adding in, you know, valerian and kava for sleep issues, those are known to have, in some cases, some toxic effects for certain susceptible individuals. In those cases, with very specific supplements, we'll think liver and be worried, but not mostly. We're not generally.
But there is the addition of doing things that's going to increase detox, and somebody has, you know, it's not from that perspective, a overloading the liver, like we're going to cause a inflammatory condition. It's more of, we could create something where we're, say, detoxing somebody, where we're breaking down infections too quickly and they're releasing all their virulence factors, and that's causing a lot of reactivity of the body that the liver has to deal with. So it's not so much overloading the liver with some of these things from an inflammatory perspective like it would with vitamin A, but there's also that consideration of basically going faster than the liver has a ability due to rate-limiting enzymes in, say, some of the detoxification processes that would prevent the liver from fully breaking down things as quickly as it would need to kind of keep somebody out of experiencing symptoms.
So next question, best standalone water filter if you're renting and cannot install a proper filter for the whole house, not one that attaches to the water supply. So it looks like there's been investigation into the Berkey that stand on the counter, but they're pricey and take a lot of space, so it doesn't fit the needs. Wondering if you have any ideas. So Berkey makes a travel size filter. So if the Berkey is too big, look at the Berkey travel filter, add a fluoride filter to it if you're on city water that's fluoridated. So that can be a great option. And there's also there's reverse osmosis is a great under the sink option if you can get a zero waste one, but of course that doesn't fit in this case, but there is an over-the-sink one that is, if you search Dr. Hyman, Mark Hyman water, he's doing a promotion on it, and I'm going to get you the name here. That's one that can be helpful. It's called Aqua True, AQUATRU, and it uses reverse osmosis technology, but it's a compact on the counter. And he puts out, at least for right now, $100 off on that one for readers of his blog. So that may be a little better. Either the travel Berkey with a fluoride filter or a Aqua True may be a good fit for that situation that you're in. And then next we see confusion on which clients to use saliva testing for. Actually, one more thing before we go into that. With water, there's of course also the ability to get spring water delivered. And in some cases, that's going to be good for drinking water. It may be cost prohibitive to do that for all of cooking needs and other things. So it's usually good to have a filter as well. But if you are looking just for drinking water, then spring water from like El Dorado or another that's local to your area can be a really great thing to add in. Okay, so next, Dutch. So Dutch has released, so Precision Hormones, Precision Analytical, has released a test. The dried urine test for complete hormones, or Dutch testing, has released a Dutch Plus. The Dutch Plus test adds the salivary cortisol awakening response onto their normal urine testing. And so it looks at the saliva, the salivary, it corrects some of the problems that were previously in saliva testing, and allows for a really good measure of the cortisol awakening response, which happens generally in that half hour-ish after waking time. Now, the question here is, which clients to use the Dutch Plus versus the Dutch Adrenals? And the Dutch Plus, which is more expensive, is something to consider. When does that extra cost provide enough value to warrant it for ordering it for clients? And so the commentary here is that not all clients can afford the Dutch Plus, and the saliva or cortisol awakening response isn't offered yet with the Dutch Adrenal. So when do we decide how to order that? So cortisol awakening response is something that, because it's really okay, I think we're back here.
And it's recording again still, looks like.
Yep. Little internet glitch there. We already have the question, so we can just keep this up. So, when do we order the Dutch Plus with the car? So that cortisol awakening response is, because it's focused on that rising time, that approximately half hour after awakening, and seeing where cortisol is at there, which is a very robust, it's about 50% of cortisol production for the entire day happens in that initial hour after waking. If we hit that nice window, we're going to get a good idea of cortisol production, especially in the beginning of the day. So when this would be really appropriate and worth the additional cost is when we see an issue with a person, especially in the morning. So if someone's dragging to get out of bed in the morning, if it seems like they don't fully wake up until 2 or 3 hours after they first open their eyes, if it seems as if they're struggling to get out of bed in the morning, if it seems as if they're in a situation where they're either too high or too low first thing. So too high would be too anxious right away in the morning. They wake up really anxious, or right away in the morning, they're dragging in order to get themselves ready, and isn't until they've had a cup of coffee or two, or until they've had an hour or two of meandering around before they feel like they're thinking clearly, before they feel like they're awake. That's going to be when cortisol awakening response might reveal something that we wouldn't necessarily see in the normal Dutch adrenals, where we're getting an overall sense for cortisol, but we're not seeing that peak of what happens right after waking. And so if someone's, on average, their energy is pretty good, but in the morning they have the highest amount of symptomatology, either up or down, either anxiety or fatigue, that's when CAR would be really helpful, because the Dutch Plus would be really helpful, because we're going to see, is that cortisol awakening response dysregulated? And treatment's the same. If cortisol awakening response is too high, we want to lower. And if it's too low, we want to raise. Treatment's the same. There's no difference in terms of what you're going to do treatment-wise. Diagnosis can be a little different, though, because you might see someone who, from a normal Dutch adrenals, has four free cortisol measures that look normal in the urine, but we didn't catch that initial production and see how that goes. So in those cases, Dutch Plus would be worth it. If that's not the case, Dutch Plus may not be worth it, depending on the individual and whether we think that that initial production might be of issue for them.
Okay, so these are all the questions for today. So with that, we are going to... So question here, since Dutch offers either saliva or the urine cortisol, what do we feel more is more accurate for free cortisol?
So for free cortisol, both are accurate. Both are really well established in research. Unless someone's got kidney disease, and then we might not do urinary, or if someone, most labs that measure saliva either have problems with the production of adequate saliva or the preservation, but Dutch has solved those problems because of the way that they're collecting saliva with the swab. So I do trust both. So really it's a matter of, do we want the cortisol awakening response? That is the most critical thing. Really the thing is, the advantage in my mind to salivary is the cortisol awakening response. And that's the main thing, that if that is important information, I would choose salivary. If not, I would typically choose urine.